Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and I'm back to read part two of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. As always, we begin the section with the reading of the obituaries for today. As a side note, obituaries in the News Gazette. Families may submit personalized obituaries for publication through their funeral homes. The cost for obituaries is based on length. Also available are basic obituaries and death notices at no charge. Obituaries are also posted online at newsgazette.com. The first death notice is for Katherine Anderson. That's Katherine, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N, Anderson. Katherine N. Anderson, 96 of Clinton, died at 1:10 a.m., Monday, April 15th, 2024, at Manor Court, Clinton. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time, but will be handled by Calvert Funeral Home, C-A-L-V-E-R-T, Funeral Home, 201 South Center Street, Clinton. The next death notice is for Ruth E. Brazel, B-R-A-Z-E-L. Ruth Elizabeth Brazel, 93, died at 5:34 a.m. Saturday, April 13th, 2024, at Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Care in Hoopston. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Friday at Rossville Church of Christ, 514 East Attica Street, Rossville. Pastor Kevin Purdy will officiate. Burial will be in Rossville Cemetery in Rossville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday at the church. Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main Street in Hoopston is in charge of the arrangements. The next death notice is for Dorothy Bunten, B-U-N-T-E-N. Dorothy Jutz Bunten, 82, of Rantoul, died peacefully at home at 7:06 a.m. Sunday, April 14, 2024. A funeral service will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the American Lutheran Church, 500 Church Street, Rantoul. The Reverend James Lehman will officiate. Burial will follow in Beckman Cemetery in Thomasboro. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Lux Memorial Chapel of Rantoul is handling the services. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. The next death notice is for Bradley Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N. Bradley Cannon, 63, died at 9:13 a.m. Saturday, April 13, 2024, at home. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time, but will be handled by Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. The next death notice is for John K. Chaney, or Channy, excuse me, C-H-A-N-E-Y. John Kirby Channy, 83, of Mount Zion, formerly of Urbana, died at 6:47 a.m. Sunday, April 14, 2024, at Imboden Creek Senior Living Center. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Friday at Renner Wyckoff Chapel, 1900 South Philo Road in Urbana. James Blue will officiate. Burial will be in Grandview Memorial Gardens, Champaign. Visitation will be from noon to 1 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. The next death notice is for Rosemary Coffey, C-O-F-F-E-Y. Rosemary Coffey, 85, of Champaign, died Sunday, April 14, 2024, at Meadowbrook Health Center in Urbana. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time, but will be handled by Owens Funeral Home, 101 North Elm Street, Champaign. The next death notice is for Leona M. Zerwanka, C-Z-E-R-W-O-N-K-A. Leona M. Zerwanka, 88, of Tuscola, died at 3:05 a.m. Monday, April 15, 2024, at Arthur Home in Arthur. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 600 East North Line Road, Tuscola. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at the church. The Reverend Jason Bratton will officiate. Burial will be in St. Paul's Lutheran Cemetery in Siegel. Philagos Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street in Tuscola, is in charge of the arrangements. The next death notice is for Robert DeVore, DeVore. Robert Bob Byron DeVore, 93, passed away Wednesday, April 10, 2024, in Danville. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made to the VA Ileana facility in Danville, VA Ileana, HCS, 1900 East Main Street, Danville, Illinois, 61832, Voluntary Services Mail Code 135. The Morgan Memorial Home in Savoy is assisting the family with private funeral arrangements. Online condolences can be made to Morgan, M-O-R-G-A-N, memorialhome.com. The next death notice is for Tyler Faulkner, F-A-U-L-K-N-E-R. Tyler Amir Faulkner, 34, of Champaign, passed away Wednesday, April 10, 2024. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 16th at Morgan Memorial Home in Savoy. In honor of our beloved son, brother, and friend to many, we ask that donations be made out to Depression and Bipolar Alliance for those with mental health conditions in our community. Condolences may be offered online at morganmemorialhome.com. The next death notice is for Timothy J. Hahn, H-A-H-N. Timothy J. Hahn, 85, of Paris, Illinois, died Sunday, April 7, 2024. In lieu of flowers, we believe Tim would encourage those who are able to plant a garden, specifically tomatoes, and think of him while enjoying a freshly picked, sun-ripened tomato on a hot summer evening. A mass of Christian burial was celebrated at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 13th, at St. Aloysius Catholic Church. Visitation was from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Additional information and online condolences can be left at Templeton Funeral Home, T-E-M-P-L-E-T-O-N, funeralhome.com. The next death notice is for Frank Howard. Frank Howard, 72, of Gifford, died Friday, April 12, 2024, at home. Memorial services will be at 7 p.m. May 10th at St. Paul Lutheran Church, 108 East Church Street, Gifford. Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory at 1900 South Philo Road in Urbana is in charge of the arrangements. The next death notice is for Willie V. Jackson. That's Willie V. W-I-L-L-I-E-V-E-E, all one word, last name Jackson. Willie V. or Sissy Jackson, 73, of Sandy Springs, Georgia, formerly of Champaign, died at 7:01 p.m. Thursday, April 4, 2024, at Wellstar Kenstone Hospital in Marietta, Georgia. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Friday at Church of the Living God, 1109 North 4th Street in Champaign, with funeral services to follow at noon. Bishop Lloyd E. Gwynn, G-W-I-N, will officiate. Burial will be in Lincoln Memorial Gardens in Urbana. Perry's Twin City Mortuary Service at 110 West Vine Street in Champaign is handling the arrangements. The next death notice is for Bonnie Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y. It is with profound sadness and boundless admiration that we announce the passing of Barbara Bonnie Helen Baker Kelly, 82, who left us peacefully on Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Parkland College Scholarship Fund, a cause close to Bonnie's heart, ensuring her passion for education continues to empower and inspire others. Visitation will be held at Owens Funeral Home, 101 North Elm Street, Champaign, on Tuesday, April 16th from 4 to 6 p.m. Funeral Mass will be celebrated at Holy Cross Catholic Church, 403 West Clark Street in Champaign, on Wednesday, April 17th at 10 a.m. Burial will immediately follow in Mount Olive Cemetery in Mayview. Condolences may be offered at owensfuneralhomes.com, O-W-E-N-S, funeralhomes, plural.com. The next death notice is for Linda May. That's M-A-Y is her last name. Linda May May, that's Linda, middle name M-A-E, last name M-A-Y, Born January 25th, 1938, south of Fisher, resided in St. Joseph, departed this earth surrounded by her loved ones on Monday, April 15th, 2024. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, April 18th at Freese Funeral Home, 302 East Grand Avenue in St. Joseph. Pastor Sally Swaim will officiate. Burial will be in East Lawn Memorial Park in Urbana. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday. The next death notice is for Mary McMahon, M-C-M-A-H-O-N. Mary Teresa McMahon, 94, of Champaign, died at home, surrounded by her children on Friday morning, April 12, 2024. There will be a visitation Friday, April 19th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Owens Funeral Home, 101 North Elm Street in Champaign. Funeral Mass will be celebrated on Saturday, April 20th at 10 a.m. at St. Boniface Catholic Church, Seymour. Burial will immediately follow in St. Boniface Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations may be made to Holy Cross School in Champaign, the St. Boniface Cemetery Fund, or to a charity of your choice. Condolences may be offered online at owensfuneralhomes.com. That's O-W-E-N-S, funeralhomes, plural, .com. The next death notice is for Roger Moody, M-O-O-D-Y. Roger Moody, 73, of Clinton, died at 7:09 p.m. Sunday, April 14th, 2024, at St. John's Hospital in Springfield. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time, but will be handled by Calvert Funeral Home, 201 South Center Street in Clinton. The next death notice is for Robert Rainwater. Robert Rainwater, 68, of Decatur, formerly of Danville and Hoopston, died at 2:15 a.m. Saturday, April 13th, 2024, at The Loft of Rock Springs, Decatur. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time, but will be handled by Rort Vet, R-O-R-T-V-E-D-T, Funeral Services and Crematory, 3 South Hodge Street, Tilton. The next death notice is for Atron T. Reagan. That's Atron, A-T-R-O-N, middle name T, Reagan, R-E-G-E-N. Atron T. Reagan, 71, died at 3:20 p.m. Sunday, April 14th, 2024, at home. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time, but will be handled by Owens Funeral Home, 101 North Elm Street, Champaign. The next death notice is for Wayne Roberts. Wayne Earl Roberts, 96, of Savoy, passed away peacefully at 8:50 p.m. Friday, April 12, 2024, at Accolade Healthcare of Savoy, following a brief illness. Visitation will be Wednesday, April 17th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Morgan Memorial Home, 1304 Regency Drive West in Savoy. The funeral service will be on Thursday, April 18th at 1 p.m. with the Reverend Jungle Ree officiating. Burial will follow in Grandview Memorial Gardens in Champaign. Memorial contributions may be made to Savoy United Methodist Church, 3002 West Old Church Road, Champaign, Illinois, 61822. Condolences to the family may be left at morganmemorialhome.com or sent to the family of Wayne Roberts, 1185 CR 1100 North, Champaign, Illinois, 61822. The next death notice is for Lola Stidham, S-T-I-D-H-A-M. On Monday, April 15, 2024, Lola was reunited with her late husband, three of her children, two grandsons, and many others whom she loved and cherished. Lola passed away peacefully in her home. Lola passed away peacefully in her home, surrounded by her favorite people. A funeral service will be at 10 Wednesday morning at Lux Memorial Chapel, 1551 East Grove Avenue in Rantoul. Burial will be at 2 p.m. at Elm Lawn Cemetery in Elmhurst. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. The next death notice is for Jim Trukowski, T-R-U-S-K, K-O-S-K-Y. James or Jim William Trakowski, 82, of Danville, passed away at 10:39 a.m. Friday, April 12, 2024, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A memorial service to celebrate the life of Jim Trakowski will be at 6 p.m. Thursday, April 18th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, which is located at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Pastor Greg Taylor will officiate. Visitation will be from 5 to 6 p.m. prior to the service Thursday, also at Sunset in Danville. Cremation rites will be accorded. Please join Jim's family in sharing memories, photos, and video of his life through his tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. The next death notice is for Dan Van Meter, last name, all one word, capital V-A-N, or capital V, lowercase a-N, capital M-E-T-E-R. Dan Van Meter, 89, of Savoy, died Thursday, April 11, 2024, at home. Memorial services for the Army veteran will be at 4:30 p.m. Friday at Faith United Methodist Church, 1719 South Prospect Avenue in Champaign. Morgan Memorial Home at 1304 Regency Drive West in Savoy is in charge of the arrangements. The next death notice is for Roger White. Roger L. White, 87, of Rantoul, died unexpectedly of natural causes on Monday, April 15, 2024, at home. Funeral services will be at 11 Monday morning. That was yesterday, I believe, or next Monday. I'm not sure. Yes, it would have to be next Monday at Lux Memorial Chapel, 1551 East Grove Avenue in Rantoul. The Reverend Dave Ashby will officiate. That's David Ashby. Burial will follow in Elmwood Cemetery in Rantoul. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. That concludes our reading of the obituaries for today. We'll now continue on with more of today's top stories. The next headline reads, My Turn by Janina Baker. What do school boards do anyway? I had someone recently ask me if we, the Board of Education, evaluate all staff in advance of recommendations for raises. This made me pause and ultimately decide to write this article. While it's clear to me that our, the board's, only employee is the superintendent and relies on a chain of command to conduct subsequent evaluations, I'm sure there were others who had the same question. In the last 8 years, the main question I get, even from my kids, is what do school boards do? My answer? Put simply, school boards set policy, adopt a budget, and hire and evaluate a superintendent. That usually then brings up the next question of, well, what is the role of the superintendent? I hope what follows will help make this clearer. If you've written to the Board of Education about an issue, you most likely received this answer. Thank you for your email. The superintendent is in charge of district and day-to-day operations while the board governs through policy. While there are select issues that truly involve the board, we've seen a growing interest in how the district operates on a day-to-day basis. For instance, we've received emails about the Kids Plus waitlist, vendors seeking to do business with the district, educator staff evaluations, classroom instruction concerns, professional development, etc. While helpful to hear feedback from our community regarding the previous concerns, ultimately, it is the superintendent who runs the district. What do I mean by run the district, quote unquote? The superintendent, in collaboration with their leadership teams, educators and staff, decide on instructional frameworks, curricula, professional development, daily operations of the district. It is important to note here that the superintendent does not have free will, as they have to operate within the agreed-to guidelines of collective bargaining with educators and staff in addition to board policy. Collaborative decisions from these groups are what shows up at board meetings. When information is presented at board meetings, most items have passed through several hands. For instance, administrative hires might have gone through 3 levels of interviews with parents, educators, and staff before we, the board, see it as an agenda item. This does not mean we rubber stamp the recommendations. Rather, we provide another source of input should something seem out of the ordinary. Another example is curriculum adoptions. Boards are tasked with final adoption of various curricula in our schools. Over the past year, reading, physical education, health, driver's education, social studies, and French curricula have been reviewed. Scores of educators have examined different curricula and even piloted them in their classrooms. For instance, Kenwood educators piloted the new Core Knowledge Language Arts curriculum, Core Knowledge Language Arts, also called CKLA, for a full year before adoption. Again, when it was presented to the board, we had a chance to hear about the enormous amount of work it took to get to this point, ask relevant questions, and celebrate the work of all the people involved. We didn't rubber stamp it, but we did trust that the experts, in this case our educators, had done enough to vet the curricula for approval. The board, however, is most concerned with policy and governance. What does that mean? We direct the superintendent through our board policies. It is incredibly important that these policies remain updated, relevant, fair, and equitable. If a community member brings a concern to us and is unsure if we can help, we might ask them to review our current policy and forward us suggestions to clarify said policy to better address their concerns. In saying this, we understand that not everyone even knows we have policies. Our board has spent the last 4 years working to narrow close to 400 plus policies down to about 200. Once unwieldy, we can now spend time clarifying our policies to make them work for our district. Additionally, we clarify the district's purpose. What does that mean? We engage community, educators, and staff in a process to set a clear direction for our district. For us, we engaged in a strategic planning process. Our mission, vision, and strategic plan are incredibly crucial to purpose and are what the superintendent uses to decide their day-to-day operations. Overall, the board's role is more of checks and balances, ensuring transparency and accountability in decision-making. Thus, it is important that the board be a representative group of community members impacted by board policy. It's a responsibility that requires diverse perspectives and expertise around finances, policy, and evaluations. Those most familiar with the field of education, specifically retired educators, would be invaluable contributors. If you'll have me, I'd like to periodically update you on our role as board members and what we do. And for the record, my answer to the question that led this article included the following. I'm pretty sure our educators and staff wouldn't want 7 random people to evaluate them. Additionally, we don't have the woman manpower to do it. Janina Baker is president of Champaign Unit 4 School Board and has served as a member for the past 8 years. The opinions represented above are her speaking as an individual board member, not on behalf of the board. And there's a nice photograph of Janina. Looks like she's standing outside of a front door of a house. And it says Janina Baker, Champaign Unit 4 School Board President. That photograph is provided by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. And as a quick follow-up, every Tuesday in the News Gazette will turn over our commentary page to community experts with local ties. If you have interest in weighing in on a topic, making news, please contact editor Jeff D'Alessio at jdalessio@newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, My Turn by Michael Leroy, or Leroy, L-E, capital L, capital R-O-Y. Why do collectives pay NIL taxes? In January, the IRS sent a newly formed NIL collective an adverse determination letter notifying the collective that it failed to qualify as a nonprofit under Section 501c3 of the tax code. As the IRS sees it, a collective is an NIL, name, image, likeness, organization, that pools money from fans, alumni, and generous private donors. Furthermore, the IRS has explained that collectives serve a private rather than a public interest. This is because they confer benefits primarily on student athletes of a particular university's sports teams for the use of their NIL without demonstrating that these student athletes belong to a charitable class. Does this mean that the IRS is going to try to shut down NIL collectives as tax-exempt corporations? Tax experts think this is unlikely because spending cuts to the IRS are forcing the agency to be more selective about cracking down on tax code violators. My research shows that NIL collectives are probably an intermediate step to the pay-for-play model. In other words, the questionable tax advantages of NIL collectives are probably going to be a moot point as NIL collectives are gradually absorbed into athletic departments or adjacent university foundations. Texas A&M formed a branch for its NIL collective within the university's foundation, a strategy that offered many fan engagement by directly linking donations to access to athletes. But Texas A&M shut this down after concerns arose about the foundation losing its tax-exempt status. Such a result would be very damaging to the welfare of any university. No other university is known to have tried to link its collective to its foundation, but tax filings of NIL collectives show that there are similar ways to achieve this outcome. ICON Collective Inc., that's ICON Collective Inc., offers an example. Its most recent tax return for 2022 showed on Part 3, Line 28, the organization worked to identify, communicate with, and engage with student athletes at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign to perform work aimed at achieving one or more charitable, educational, or scientific purpose. In Part 4, list of officers, directors, trustees, and key employees, Mary Ellen Pennacook is listed as a director who made $0 in this role. She also appears as a governing director of the University of Illinois Foundation. This does not appear to be an uncommon relationship. The University of Iowa's NIL collective is named Iowa Swarm. The collective's website lists Jane Oswald as Iowa Swarm's Vice President of Events and Engagement. Her bio explains, Jane has served as the Director of Events with Iowa Athletics Development at the U of I Center for Advancement since 2010, overseeing the department's donors' events, game day-related activities, the Hawkeye Events Tour, Hawkeye Huddles, and management of iClub chapters. If anything, the functional connection between the University of Iowa Foundation and its athletic department is more explicitly delineated by Iowa Swarm's website than by ICON Collective Inc.'s tax filing. In other words, if we put Texas A&M, Illinois, and Iowa in the same picture, we see that all three universities have formed linkages between their foundations and NIL collectives. Of the three schools, Texas A&M tried to bring the NIL collective in-house and backed off. Iowa doesn't go that far, but has a key foundation employee co-listed as an executive officer of its NIL collective. Illinois, by comparison, has a more remote and cautious linkage, albeit a functional relationship in the governance structure of its collective and its foundation. Nonetheless, the U of I Foundation's new building, located in the midst of the Illini Sports Complex, furthers the impression that foundation work and athletics are closely intertwined. Legislation in Virginia suggests that NIL collectives will eventually be housed directly in athletic departments. Currently, House Bill 1505 is sitting on the desk of Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. Republicans and Democrats in this politically polarized state overwhelmingly passed this bill in both chambers of the state's assembly. In my judgment, it's not a question of if, but when NIL will be housed in athletic departments. But that won't be the end of the story. When we pay a tip or service charge, the restaurant is permitted to pool this money to pay not only our server, but the cooks, dishwasher, bus people, and greeters. This payment process is regulated by the U.S. Department of Labor. In the case of the restaurant and possibly Virginia athletic departments and others to follow, it's the patrons who pay the labor. If the Supreme Court's 9-0 vote in NCAA versus Alston is any indication, courts won't see a legal difference between paying servers out of a pooled tip money and paying college athletes in all sports out of pooled NIL donor money. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been Part 2 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 16, 2024. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure to read with you, and I'll return to read with you again next week. Have a wonderful day.